Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. I am Alan Chartok. With us this week is the guy who's always on the front page of the New York Times, Blair Horner, the executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. Welcome back, Blair.
Thanks for having me.
You've brought such distinction to NYPIRG. You know, I remember when I was a bunch of kids knocking on your door and, you know, doing the right thing. Of course, we knew that. But, you know, now NYPIRG is the place to go.
Well, it's a fun place to work, and I've been there a long time. Actually, this May, Alan, it'll be 40 years since I started.
Wow, that's a long time to be in the wilderness.
Yes. Some people like being in the wilderness. Apparently, that would be me.
40 years in the wilderness, in case you didn't get the reference out there. Okay, so there is a tornado that is coming through the state Senate and the state assembly. And you and I have talked about this, whether or not some of the phonies in the assembly who were voting for things knowing that they wouldn't go through the Senate would actually vote for them when the time came. Are you following me?
Yes.
And then we found out that they would want to go through some of those.
Well, this month has been really sort of very active, the most active legislative session so far. I mean, I've been working in Albany since 1984. I've never seen anything like it so far. And there are a package of voting bills.
Wait, you've been here for 40 years?
Working in Albany in 1984.
Yeah.
Before then, I was with NYPIRG.
NYPIRG, okay,
go ahead. Just the math part. I know.
No, I'm not good at that.
It's just trying to trip me up.
Yeah.
So a package of voting bills dealing with allowing for early voting, which is a nice modern step.
So what are those bills?
So one is to allow early voting, which would allow New Yorkers 9 days before the election to go to a board of elections, probably in a county designated area. And
can you mail it in?
You'll be able to have, if a constitutional amendment passes, you'll be able to have no excuse affidavit ballots so that you'll be able to get an affidavit without having to come up with an excuse as to why you can't vote, which is the current constitutional requirement in New York. That's two. So early voting, no excuse affidavit. They also passed a constitutional amendment to allow for same-day registration, so people, particularly newer voters, would be able to register and vote on the same day.
Well, the Republicans have always been saying that's a bad idea because, it will hamper the security of the voting booth.
Well, I mean, a lot of these, one of the issues that we've always looked at on this stuff is there's a lot of states that do all of these things. I mean, New York's been a caboose when it comes to voting for decades, and there are other states that have sort of pioneered new ways to do registration. And so, for example, the states that have the highest turnouts are the states that already allow same-day registration, and they've been able to pull it off for years now.
Which is why the Republicans hated the idea, because they were going to get more Democrats.
Well, in New York, Republicans are at an enrollment disadvantage, no doubt about it. But the argument that somehow it will lead to more fraud is fraudulent because states do it and they haven't had any problems. So there's ways to do it in other states. That's three. Also, there was a proposal to allow 16 and 17-year-olds to register to vote in advance of their 18th birthday. So they're sort of in the system when they're getting their driver's licenses in particular. They could automatically get registered to vote, even though they wouldn't be able to until their 18th birthday. There was also a proposal to shrink the limited liability company campaign contribution loophole.
And that was the LLC, because there's still a lot of people out there who have no idea what that is.
Yeah, well, that's true. Limited liability companies was a change in the tax law in the early 1990s to basically allow for easy pass construction of a corporation. Limited liability company allows companies to set up relatively quickly and not to be encumbered by things like telling who's behind it. Mm-hmm. In the campaign finance system, it's been used primarily by real estate developers, but others, to channel campaign contributions into the political system. So one particular real estate management company in Manhattan, Glenwood Management, was able to funnel $12 million in campaign contributions in through 70 different LLCs. And the reason they were able to do so much is because the State Board of Elections had interpreted New York State campaign finance law to say LLCs are humans, not corporations, for the purposes of campaign contributions. The law that passed now basically says that the businesses known as LLCs will be treated like other corporations for the purposes of campaign contributions. and that shrinks the amount of money that they can donate to the system. Another proposal outside of the sort of voting democracy realm, a bill passed to the so-called State Dream Act, which will allow for financial aid to be available to eligible college students who are undocumented immigrants. Back in the days when Governor Pataki was governor, the state passed a law to allow those students to pay in-state tuition, but did not allow them to get financial aid. That's been remedied by this bill. So it's been a lot of stuff. This, of course, there's other issues dealing with reproductive rights, gun control that have been passing this month. So the Democrats have come out, you know, really with the pedal to the metal in terms of trying to get bills done.
So Blair Horner, one of the two great experts on New York state government.
And I'm talking to the other one.
You know, you and Jerry Benjamin, my pal from New Paltz. Now, one of the questions I wanted to ask you about that here is this. How are the leaders of the Senate and the Assembly getting along with each other? In other words, we got Carl Hastie, otherwise known in my lexicon as Boss Hastie, because he was boss of the Bronx, now he's boss of the Assembly, and Andrea Stewart Cousins, who is showing remarkable leadership ability in the New York State Senate. What is your sense of how they're doing together?
I mean, you always measure by actual product, not what they talk about. And so, you know, and we just talked about a bunch of bills that passed, and that takes the cooperation, the leadership in both houses and the governor.
But of course, Blair, there seems to be a little bit of a problem in that the Senate has just elected a whole bunch of purplish Democrats from outside of New York City. And in order to keep their control, they have to keep those people.
That's right.
And there are some issues that divide the rather progressive New York City-oriented, labor-dominated assembly from the Senate. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Well, I mean, the one issue where it's most obvious is the cap, the property tax cap, where there's the Senate has indicated that they're willing to approve legislation to make that permanent. They may have already voted on it.
And the governor likes that.
The governor likes it. It's his idea.
Yeah.
The assembly does not like it.
That's 2%. You can't raise it more than 2%.
That's right. Unless there's a referendum process,
right.
I believe, where you need a 3/5 majority in terms to rule it. And that applies to both school taxes and property taxes generally. And so the governor has touted that as one of his fiscal measures that he's been able to sort of rein in the increases in property taxes in New York State. It's a sort of a signature issue for him. He helped the Democrats take the state Senate. And so the Democrats in the Senate, for either reasons of policy or politics, seem to be willing to go along with the governor's idea. And the Assembly Democrats never liked it and still don't. So how that plays out, who knows? I mean, because of the governor's influence in the Senate, there are issues that divide the legislature. But then there are also issues where the legislature teams up against the executive. I mean, New York has a very powerful executive constitutionally. And the legislative branches, which is supposed to check and balance that, has to come together on issues. And I think some of the reasons why you've seen a lot of bills pass, bills that are, by the way, the proposals are contained in the governor's budget, is a way for the legislature to push back against the governor jamming policy initiatives through in the budget process.
Got it.
And so there's different kinds of tensions. I mean, there's always the legislative-executive tension, no matter who controls the houses. And there's been some tensions, certainly among Democrats, because Democrats being Democrats, there's always tensions among Democrats. In terms of the Senate, there's 39 senators that are Democrats. I think the number is there's 6 on Long Island that are in the suburban areas. I believe there's 3 or 4 in the northern suburbs and 2 upstate.
And those are the people who are going to want limits on how much you can tax them because things
property
are terrible.
Taxes are big issues in the suburbs and upstate New York. And so you're looking at somewhere around a dozen of the 39 Democrats, not counting Simca Felder from Brooklyn.
Yeah, we don't want to count him.
So it's about a third of the conference really cares a lot about property taxes. And their constituents do, too. And so it's a different makeup where in the assembly you have 107 Democrats, even if there are 40 or 50 of them that are outside of the city. The dynamics of who controls the conference are very different.
Well, shouldn't Boss Hastie take some pity and understand that if he wants to keep things going the way they're going in the Senate Democratic, that he has to listen to what they're thinking?
Well, I mean, that may ultimately be the deal, right? We don't know. I mean, part of the dynamic of any time you negotiate is one longtime lobbyist once told me we were doing a big negotiation. He says, always say no, because someday you can say yes. But once you say yes, you can never say no.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may be seeing this dynamic playing out now where the Assembly Democrats, reflecting the issues of some of the labor unions, particularly the teachers, are not big fans of the cap. And so for now, they can say no. And who knows what happens over the next 2 months.
So who's more important, the governor or the labor unions?
Well, we'll see how it plays out. I think the governor has the constitutional power in the budget process that supersedes the power of the legislative branch. And we could argue if that's a good or bad idea, but it's the reality. And so how this plays out, we don't know. There's probably room to negotiate in terms of how you could have a tax cap that everyone could live with.
Okay, let's move on here a bit. First of all, I want to ask you something. There's a guy I really like, the Nixon's son-in-law, Ed Cox, who's the head of the Republican Party in New York State. And some people have long knives out for him because, you know, the Republicans aren't doing that well right now. Right. Can you parse that whole thing for us?
Well, I mean, you know, you look at the enrollment. I mean, enrollment matters when it comes to political parties, and the enrollment among Republicans has been flat now, if not gone down, over the last 10 years. And Democrats have increased dramatically, and the blanks have increased dramatically in terms of enrollment. You know, demographics is destiny when you come to the politics. And so the Republicans are getting pounded all across the board. And their national brand, which is, you know, what you've seen in America now is sort of the national branding of the political parties. The brand in New York is terrible. I mean, the president is extremely unpopular. I've talked with Republican, now former lawmakers, who said that they would have sailed to reelection had it not been for Trump.
Well, John Faso in the 19th Congressional District has said that.
Well, he may well be right. I mean, he lost in a very close race. Trump's unpopularity, you know, you're trying to swim with a cinder block around your neck. And so I think it's the same problem that Cox faces when you look at the demographics coupled with the unpopularity of the president. I think you put that all together, and he's been dealt a very tough hand to play. That being said, like in sports, you know, you don't fire the team, you fire the manager.
Sure.
If the team ends up in the cellar.
Okay, so let's go into some of the more interesting things that are going on here. There is, of course, this huge feud between the Catholic Church and Andrew Cuomo. Cuomo seems to be, well, for want of a better word, you know, having a good time with this. You know, and the Cardinal is saying, hey, you know, we don't agree with him, but we don't want to excommunicate him. Something interesting here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, religion is not one of the areas where NYPERG has any sort of positions, right? So we're not.
Well, there are no atheists in a foxhole.
Then there, we could come up with a, you know, don't take any wooden nickels, right? I mean, we could go with whatever thing we can come up with. The fight between the Catholics, the Catholics and Democratic politicians generally is, you know, really stems from the position on abortion. And that's a tension that has existed and has been used, I think, well by Republicans to create a wedge in what Irish Catholic Democrats in particular used to always vote Democrat. Irish Catholics used to vote Democratic and has been used as a wedge issue to sort of break up that coalition. And so that tension exists goes back to the governor's father in terms of the issue of, you know, the issue of choice.
But haven't these guys?
But it's exacerbated now because of the issue of the pedophilia scandals that have plagued the Catholic Church and other institutions.
Well, let's get to that for a second. And that is that the church clearly was against opening up the so-called window.
That's right.
So that people could sue, because we all suspect it was going to hurt them very badly in the pocketbook.
That's right. I mean, the legislation is called the Child Victims Act. It's not one of the issues that I work on, so I don't have a. I'm not deep in the weeds on the substance, but it essentially allows people who have been subject to abuse and have allegations to go to court, even if the allegations occurred years ago. And if they prevail, they would be entitled to monetary damages from the church. And this may well bankrupt the church. I mean, who knows? Depending on the scale of the scandals and the number of cases that are brought, they're certainly going to have to lawyer up to defend themselves. And it's a serious problem. And that additional tension, I think, as the bill played out this year, because it has passed, the governor's approved, and it looks like the Catholic Church has gone along with it, that tension exacerbates the existing tension that stems from in my view, from the issue of reproductive rights.
But the interesting thing with Cuomo is, you know, he's always got his finger up in the air, which seeing which way the political breeze is. And I think he's made the assessment that Roman Catholics in New York State are on his side rather than that of
the
clergy.
Well, when it comes to the issue of the scandal, he's right. I mean, who could defend protecting pedophiles? I mean, so you can't argue that that somehow is, that's a political winner position. And the church certainly doesn't want to protect them either. The question really is how much do they want to be exposed financially for things that occurred years ago? And that really is where the fight's played out, and it appears to have been resolved.
Blair Horner, you and I have been concerned for quite a while now about the way in which the comptroller in New York State has been treated. He had the ability to look at contracts before they were let. The Assembly and Senate, for some strange reason, took that away from him. I mean, he comes from the Assembly,
right.
Tom DiNapoli, and they took it away from him. And it was a very bad position for the governor. I kept criticizing him in columns and every other place, and I wasn't alone. The major newspapers were doing the same thing. So he seems to have given up the ghost on this one.
Although we haven't seen the bill language.
Yeah.
And we've heard the announcement, and as I mentioned earlier, you know, you always measure things by what actually is happening, not what people say. There appears to be some sort of agreement between the governor's announced that there's some sort of agreement between the comptroller and the governor to allow the comptroller in particular to look at certain contracts in the economic development sphere, particularly in SUNY, which
And we have to remember that that's where a lot of the Cuomo friends got into terrible trouble and are now on their way to prison.
Because
DiNapoli didn't have that power. We don't know if it would have made a difference, but it could have.
Yeah, I mean, the governor's argument in 2011 is, you know, it's pretty clear he's a guy who wants to get things done and get things done quickly, and he didn't want anything to sort of slow down the parade, like audits by the comptroller's office, and to even rely on the internal mechanisms that the governor put in place. Clearly didn't work. He's had now top aides, his top aide and his top economic development czar are facing prison sentences, and because they were playing games in the system. And that's a big problem. And
put another way, they were damn corrupt.
It's terrible. I mean, it's terrible. And it's not like not even just like the executive branch. We saw this sort of pay-to-play system on the legislative branch with the top legislative leaders. This is a serious problem about corruption in New York. And it's one of those issues that no one is willing to talk about down at the Capitol. They're just willing to sort of ignore it, whistle past the graveyard, and hope it doesn't impact them. If the comptroller gets his powers restored, and we would argue expanded, there's a reason why there's a separately elected comptroller. He's not chosen by the governor.
Precisely.
New Yorkers want to have an independent set of eyeballs watching the books. He should have expanded powers, not less. But we'll see what happens in terms of what the bill looks like, because until we see the bill, it's really hard to know what's actually happening.
I do know that the governor thinks that it has to be done within 30 days.
That's right. He wants the contracts wrapped up within 30 days. It seems like unusual to set an artificial deadline.
Well, he needs some face saving here.
Yeah. I mean, the comptroller's office, I mean, some of these contracts may be very complex, and the comptroller's office, they're limited in how many resources they're
looking at. Well, I asked him if he could do it. He said, sure, we can do it in 30 days.
Well, I mean, that's great. That's great. Again, we'll see the language. I'm always, we have applauded the governor's position. We think that's the right position to have. When we see the bill language, we'll know exactly how it's going
to
work.
Let's go to the pay commission. Now, remember, there's this, talking about controllers, there's this controllers sort of group that had been set up by the legislature, I suspect, to give them their pay raise and then forget about it. However, they came up with a series of recommendations of parts of their decision, which means you can't make more than 15% of your regular salary on the outside, we'll give you the pay raise. Well, a lot of them have gone nutsy cuckoo on this whole thing. And in fact, somebody is actually contesting this in the courts, that this group didn't have the power to do that. What's your thoughts?
Well, the whole thing is, I mean, at a certain level, I understand why people would be upset, but I don't understand why they think they act like they're surprised. The language of the bill that the legislature approved in last year's budget, and since it was about their pay, I'm positive, although I can't prove it, I'm positive they all read it. Because it's about their pay.
Yeah, that's one.
It's one of those issues that they would definitely. It's not, even though it's on page 157 of a bill that's 500 pages long. This is one section they knew about, and the bill clearly said that the pay commission would be allowed to raise the salaries, and they could, and they must, if they phased in the salaries, make it contingent on a timely state budget. They didn't define what timely was, and the performance of the executive and the legislature. They didn't define that. So when you don't define things, you're leaving it up to someone else to define it. And the commission did. And you're right. They did two major things. They said you can't have outside income that exceeds 15% of the highest salary, et cetera, which we talked about. And they took away the huge number of these so-called Lulus, which are stipends for committee chairs. There were more stipends in the Senate than there were senators.
Yeah.
And so now they get washed away. They have only 15 left, 9 in the Assembly, 6 in the Senate. For the top-ranking people, and you can make an argument, why do they get them, other than they control the houses.
And some of them are not taking them, have said, no, I don't want that.
Well, and so there's that. So that's what happens. They're like, you get a big pay raise, a 50% pay raise, if you give up some of the outside income. Most of them don't have outside income, so that most of them don't care. And you get rid of the Lulus, which weakens the power to some extent of the legislative leaders. So why are they going crazy? Because a lot of the members who do have outside income are the more powerful members. And I think it's a way for people to sort of make noise. The thing that's most surprising to me is apparently the Board of Elections has allowed one of the legislators to use their campaign contributions to challenge this in court, which just seems completely indefensible to me because it has nothing to do with being a candidate for office.
Now, you only got 2 minutes left, Blair Horner of NYPIRG, and I know you have a special interest in what's going on in the state university and tuitions and the city university. Maybe you could take the 2 minutes to talk about that.
All right, fair enough. So the governor's budget expands the Excelsior Scholarship Program to higher income students. We think that's good. The more students that get financial aid, the merrier, from our view. The governor does not, though, adequately fund the state university. And one particular example of that is tuition goes up every year under the so-called rational tuition. But the maximum TAP award, tuition assistance program, does not. And so for the poorest students, the difference between the higher tuition and TAP is eaten by the colleges and universities.
So is he being a phony?
So, well, it means that they are getting hammered and they're going to use the tuition increases to make up the difference, in our opinion. On top of that, the governor cuts funding for the so-called opportunity programs, which are programs used specifically for economically and educationally disadvantaged college students to help them to graduate. As a result of those programs, graduation rates among the kids in those programs are higher than in the general population graduation rates. And yet the governor cuts the funding for those programs. So there's obviously things that have to be fixed in the governor's proposed budget. There's good things, like there always is in a budget, and there's some bad things. I don't know if that's 2 minutes, but I think I did it.
No, you did it in under 2 minutes, and that was excellent. Our guest has been Blair Horner, the executive director of New York Public Interest Research Group. He is, you know, as you can all hear, so well informed on all of this that we ought to be calling it the Blair Horner Show. Blair, thanks so much.
We want people to listen.
Blair, thanks so much for joining us today.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.